When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Neil McMillan, Louisiana Department of Energy and Natural Resources Director of Federal Affairs. Neil, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Neil. Great to be here this Friday.
So, Neil, a big announcement in the Water Resources Development Act of 2024, where Louisiana scores big.
That's right. So the Water Resource Development Act is a bipartisan piece of legislation that does major infrastructure in partnership with the Army Corps. And Louisiana, we are one of the top states for doing Army Corps work, particularly because of our coastal program. And this year, this week it passed, and we have far and away the largest project authorized for construction, which is the St. Tammany Project, parish-wide flood control, protection against hurricanes, and the total number would be $5.9 billion in efforts that could be up to 18 miles of levee and flood wall, as well as raising over 6,000 homes if folks want to do that. So it's a major project and leads the country, and it's just the tip of the iceberg on the stuff Louisiana delegation got for us in that bill.
So, Neil, this construction of the levee and the like, where is that going to be located?
Yes, so the levee will protect Slidell. It'll be in the southern portion of the parish, a little above the Eden Isle neighborhoods, kind of on the lake, but really protecting all of Slidell. And then the rest of the project, which kind of address homes in the kind of lower-lying areas, will be parish-wide.
And that'll provide funds to raise homes?
That's right. So the Louisiana Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority is actually one of the leaders in the nation on this kind of new way of doing risk reduction for hurricanes with the Army Corps. So in the Southwest Coastal Project, we started doing this. But yes, it's a voluntary program. Homeowners, they're deemed eligible, can apply, and the Corps will raise a certain amount of feet based off your elevation, 100% federally funded for the homeowner. The state will have to provide a funding match, but it's a great opportunity for folks to kind of allow the storm surge from, you know, a major storm to go under their house versus into their house.
And obviously, this plan and the implementation of same, we're talking about many years to come in the future, right? Do we have any idea how long?
That's right. So one of the first milestones for this project to get to the law that passed this week started in 2015. So it's definitely a long process, but we are already authorized to do what's called pre-construction engineering and design. So that means the Corps is already working on how to roll out future funding. So this has given us permission to get funding, and we're learning lessons from the other projects we're doing on how we can go forward. But in a couple years, when funding's secured and they're able to start construction, the plan is to do several hundred homes a year and get this kind of all completed out. I think in about 12 years is the estimate, if everything goes according to plan. But it still relies on Congress to provide funding in a timely manner, which is something we certainly hope they do.
Neil, a question that always comes up every now and again as it relates to elevation. I mean, are we, is everything aligned from the parish code as it relates to elevation and what the requirements are, for example, under this funding program?
Yes, that's a lesson learned from some of this early work, is that the parish regulations, the ordinances, this type of federal funding needs to complement how those are designed, so that there's homeowners know they're doing the right thing to be eligible for this program or other federal programs. So the authorization that Congress blessed said that it would work with the state and locals to make sure those kind of local details are worked out. And the Corps has been pretty flexible. So they've been more flexible than FEMA, which does a lot of these home elevations. And so we hope that can continue. That's not something we always say about the Army Corps, but it looks like for this type of work, they're very open to making sure that it's easy to deploy and not too much of a burden on the homeowners, though. They will basically have to get up to code, and so that will cost funding for some homeowners to get ready for the full federally funding elevation. So,
because the reason I ask. The reason I ask, Neil, is that in some parishes, I've talked to folks where, you know, their next-door neighbor raised their home as a result of a grant program, and the base elevation of the top of their slab is X, right? And there's an empty lot next door to these folks, and they go these other folks go and build a new home on a slab, and that slab height is not equivalent to what the house that was raised. And, you know, folks legitimately, I think, ask, why are we doing this if we're not compelling new construction to raise to that same level?
You're right. That's a great point on planning. But I guess this project is authorized based off what's on the ground. So it would be today. So it'd be up to the parish to kind of respond for future construction.
Yeah, and I'm not being critical of the program. It's just kind of you kind of wonder, right? You know, because the base elevation of the house might be a little bit lower than what the new house is, but you know, it's like you wonder why we're not getting to a standard of how high above the crown of the street or whatever that we're going to ultimately end up building these homes. Now, this program. There are a lot of other winners, too. I mean, there's projects throughout the southeast Louisiana that are getting funded, right?
That's right. They're getting either permission to start receiving funding or improvements to even save money. So we have a new project that will start that will benefit all of Lake Pontchartrain, all nine of those parishes. And this is a really neat opportunity because it takes a Louisiana Coastal Master Plan project, the Lake Pontchartrain storm surge barrier, and ask the Corps if it's in the national interest. So that's so neat about this bill, is that it lets us develop and propose projects and then have the federal partners come in and bring all their resources there. But there's also larger studies for the Southwest region. For this, there's a very large project given permission in Plaquemines Parish to reduce flooding. And then there's several provisions to provide interest relief to the state. And so that'll save the coastal program hundreds of millions of dollars that we can then use for other projects. And so there's permission to secure new funding, and there's also lots of ways that we can save money, which for state like Louisiana is very vital.
Absolutely. And this funding it's not every year. Every 2 or 3 years that this comes around?
That's right. They try to keep it every 2 years, which is once a Congress. And that's been done for 12 years in a row. And that's very significant because you're planning these projects with the Corps. It takes years to bring them to be ready for prime time. And if Congress isn't passing them, then you get unnecessary delay, which makes nobody happy. So the steady passage of this is a big congressional priority. And, you know, it's also been cool to see that Congress has gotten this habit, and you see just very wide bipartisan margins for this. I think it had almost 400 votes in the House, and only one senator opposed it. So it's something that Congress does that doesn't make the headlines all the time, but it shows that vetted projects that have a very high cost-benefit ratio, like these core projects in Louisiana, deserve and receive national support.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations. I know you guys do a lot of, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of paperwork in getting all of this up there and having it considered, and then lobbying on behalf of these projects that are really difference makers for this Lake Pontchartrain Basin, so to speak, right?
That's right. It's for the residents and the businesses, and it's really great to get this milestone because, you know, 10 years of paperwork, you know, design, science, it's a big burden, but it'll pay off. So thank you for the time.
Yeah. Y'all are a lot more patient than I am, Neil. 10 years of paperwork.
I guess we have to be. We have to be to get that federal money. So,
absolutely.
There we go.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you. Neil McMillan, Louisiana Department of Energy and Natural Resources Director of Federal Affairs. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Well, let the games begin. We approach the deadline. It's midnight tonight for them to pass a new spending bill, a continuing resolution. Ramina Baccia joins us, Director of Budget and Entitlement Policy at the Cato Institute. Ramina, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And happy holidays to you before we get started. Ramina, I guess a great way of talking about this is let the games begin, right?
Yes, things keep changing. I'm unfortunately not yet able to get into quite into the holiday spirit because I'm basically keeping track of how this bill is developing. Are we going to have a government shutdown? Are they going to get rid of the debt limit? There's a lot at stakes at the moment.
Well, obviously, there's no money for Romina then if you can't get into the holiday spirit in this bill, right? You may be the only one that's not getting any money.
Ah, yes. Well, I will be part of the group of Americans, however, that's going to be paying for this bill, matter what. And that's always the problem, right, with these bills is that all of us Americans get stuck with the tab, and the tab is getting really, really big. We have over $36 trillion in debt now, and how this bill gets handled will tell us a lot about what we can expect next year when it comes to the Trump tax cuts and whether DOGE or Congress or all of the above will actually cut any spending whatsoever.
Who's on what side right now? It seems as though the Republicans are fractured. I guess the Democrats have coalesced. I guess the speakership is up for grabs.
I mean, the thing is that you can solve this very easily. You do not need to vote on raising the debt limit, additional disaster aid, additional subsidies for wealthy farmers. You could just keep the government open. We are operating on a continuing resolution right now. It takes no more than one page for Congress to say, we haven't been able to make decisions on these other issues, but we're not going to shut the government down. We're just going to keep it open, continue the current continuing resolution. The problem is that they're trying to use this end of year Christmas deal when the American people are busy getting ready for the holidays and doing their last minute gift shopping in order to cram through another deficit busting bill. And so I've actually been amazed at the number of Republicans that have objected to this at the risk of their reelection prospects. I'm really encouraged by the courage we're witnessing from this Congress so close to Christmas when we know they all have flights booked. They want to get out of town, but they're actually for once standing up for the American people.
I watched Chip Roy's Representative Chip Roy from Texas speech yesterday before Congress. It was blistering. I mean, he laid it all out, right?
He did. He did not hold back. He's really been a leader in this fight, and we've seen him lead on similar fights in previous years. I had the privilege of testifying before the House Budget Committee last week. He was there questioning us. So he's really at the forefront of this battle. And I was also amazed that 38 Republicans voted against this bill, despite personal threats from President-elect Donald Trump. By the way, where is the supposedly current President Biden in all of this? We haven't heard from President Biden at all. All we're hearing about is what Republicans are up to and what President-elect Donald Trump is asking them to do. It's like we have a president who's missing in action, and January 20th cannot come soon enough.
Well, he's given away billions, right, in tuition forgiveness. I mean,
every day it's
a billion here, billions there. He's given money, you know, all over the place. More money for green, more money chips. I mean, it's like Christmas for everyone.
And that's sort of the deal. What's at stake here is if Republicans had actually voted to waive the debt limits for the next 2 years, like Trump had asked for, it would have taken the pressure off them to actually cut spending next year when they're looking to extend the tax cuts. So this really sends a strong signal that Republicans are finally waking up to the need for fiscal responsibility. And I think in large part it is because they saw what happened to the Democrats because of the inflation the American people continue to suffer under. And Republicans know that if they don't cut spending, if they just extend the tax cuts and drive up the debt and deficit further, we will have another wave of inflation. And it could be potentially as bad, perhaps even worse down the road than the wave of inflation we just lived through. And they know they're going to pay the political price for that. And so even just that alone is a reason to step on the fiscal brakes and make sure that the tax cuts, the pro-growth tax cuts next year, get extended, but in a fiscally responsible way where Congress also cuts spending. Because you cannot increase spending and cut taxes into perpetuity. That is unsustainable, and that's how you will end up in a fiscal crisis. So if we want to keep taxes low, we also need to cut spending.
Yeah, that's how math works, right? It has no emotion. I mean, it is what it is. Were you surprised, because I was shocked, that they actually had a pay raise for them in that bill, the first iteration? Not that I don't, because I do believe they are worthy of a pay raise, but not in the way they were doing it. I mean, I am a big advocate, and I think you are too, for these single-item bills, you know, that we don't have all of this jambalaya of issues into one thing, providing cover for everybody to vote yay or nay on these issues.
You know, I was almost wondering if they dropped that in as a strategic move to have something in there that could be sort of a shiny object that gets people distracted, and then they could have taken it out and said, okay, if you take this out, then we'll proceed with this bill. But it didn't work out that way. Yeah, I did think it was funny that they included that pay increase in the bill. Again, this was not the biggest issue by far with the bill. It included over $100 billion in new emergency spending with no provisions to pay for that at a time when our deficit is already at $1.8 trillion. We should not be adding fuel to the deficit fire. But that did get some attention. The bill, even taking that out wasn't enough to allow that bill to sail through.
So you look into your crystal ball. It looks like they're trying to not have the Democrats are saying if you put this debt limit in there, we're voting against it. Is that correct?
Oh, no. The Democrats were very happy to raise the debt limit. Yes.
Oh, they are.
Senator Warren said, get rid of the debt limit. We're with Trump on that. Oh, no. They love spending. They don't like the debt limit at all.
Yeah. So
the Republicans who said we're not raising the debt limit without spending cuts. We will raise the debt limit, but we got to cut spending first.
So then what I guess Trump's strategy is he doesn't want to have to negotiate with the Democrats at a later time if we just remove the debt limit now.
He wouldn't even have to. No, he wouldn't have to negotiate with the Democrats because next year the Republicans control both the House and the Senate, and you can raise the debt limit as part of reconciliation. Trump doesn't want to have to negotiate with the fiscally responsible faction of the Republican Party.
The Republican
Party. He doesn't want to negotiate with the Chip Roys. That's what's really going on.
So how does this end up playing out? I mean, you know, as much as I read, I guess I was somewhat confused about who's where, what, when, and how. And I guess the general public, you know, if you're not following this, you have no clue. Mm-hmm. So you look in your crystal ball. What do you think happens today?
Well, finally, we're at a point where they're talking about voting on separate issues separately. So having a vote on the continuing resolution to keep the government open, having a separate vote on disaster relief so that members of Congress can go on the record if they just want to support that, and then having a separate vote on additional subsidies for farmers. I don't even think they should have a vote on that at all, but that's fine if they want to take a separate vote. The important thing is not to cram everything through in one package and hold, especially keeping the government open, hostage to all of these unrelated issues, right? And so I think that is big progress. They also are taking the debt limit vote completely out of this process and saying, we will address that next year as part of reconciliation. That then means there's more pressure to actually make sure that those tax cuts get extended in a fiscally responsible manner. That means pairing tax cut extensions with spending reductions. And so that keeps the pressure on. So this looks like a very promising approach to me. We'll have to see if enough Republicans go for it and how many Democrats will be necessary to get it over the finish line. And if the Democrats want to have a government shutdown, because if you have a separate vote in the CR, it'll be much easier to pinpoint who actually voted against keeping the government open.
Absolutely. What is the exigency behind the farm aid bill?
That is a very good question. Lobbying, most likely, people wanting to get paid. Very well-organized special interest groups that benefit from taxpayer subsidies at the cost of the cost of the rest of us. Another bill that's being considered that the House already passed is the Social Security Unfairness Act. It's officially called the Social Security Fairness Act, but it's actually highly unfair. So I think we should call it what it is. And that would be a handout to public sector unions boosting Social Security benefits for public sector workers who only paid into Social Security for part of their career and also have pensions from the public sector work. And it would unfairly increase their benefits to the tune of $200 billion over the next 10 years, which of course would accelerate Social Security's insolvency and then bring about potential benefit cuts or higher taxes to keep Social Security benefits flowing even sooner. And so that's another bill that is a good example of special interest groups being very effective at lobbying members of Congress to bestow them with special handouts and benefits at the cost at a cost to the rest of us.
If you would help me understand this, so why wouldn't you just in that with the public sector? I was one of those, and I have a pension, but I also worked a second job the entire time that I was in the public sector. You know, I taught at a university for 9 years. I had other jobs that I did on the side as a young man in the public sector, and I paid into Social Security for all of those jobs that I had. So what is the rub with that? You know, where I've paid into Social Security and then I have to take a reduction of my public pension and I'm not given the full benefit of what I actually, if anybody else had paid in what I paid in, they would have a benefit calculated for them based on the contribution. I'm not exactly clear what the issue is there.
Yeah, the issue is that Social Security benefits are only loosely tied to what you paid into Social Security. The benefit formula is highly progressive with the intent of ensuring that very low income earners have a sufficiently high benefit. And so there's a lot of redistribution that goes on through the benefit formula. And so what the windfall elimination provision tried to do is account for the fact that you may not actually be a low income person, but rather you just have a limited number of credits in Social Security because most of your career was spent in work that wasn't subject to Social Security taxation. And at the time when they adopted this formula, the Social Security Administration didn't have very sophisticated data, so they kind of adopted a blunt formula that works reasonably well, but causes some inequities. So there is reason to fix that formula. And there's actually an approach now that the Budget Committee Chairman Jody Arrington has introduced that would apply an actuarially fair calculation. So some people would see their benefits go up under that. Some people's benefits would be slightly reduced. But just simply repealing the windfall elimination provision would basically treat any public sector worker who has partial Social Security credits as if they were a low-income person and would give them a much higher replacement rate for their Social Security contributions than any other American will receive.
And that would be those that didn't get reach the necessary quarters, as many people refer to it?
Well, everyone, in order to collect any Social Security benefit, right, has to have 10 years of earnings in Social Security, and then the max number of years that Social Security will consider is 35. So for many of those public sector workers, they're over that 10-year threshold, but they don't have the 35 years of earnings.
Right. Okay. I see. I was kind of curious because they kept saying that people, you know, that there was a windfall that was going to be had, that they were being given credit for the years that they served in public service. And that didn't seem fair to me if they had never worked and, you know, and never contributed to Social Security.
It's more about trying to distinguish who is actually low income and needs more redistribution through Social Security, because it's an income transfer program. If it was a pension program, if it was actually your savings with interest that you were getting back, we wouldn't even have to have this conversation. But because it is a progressive income transfer program, we want to make sure we distinguish people who are actually in need from people who just had outside earnings and then had, you know, some Social Security earnings, but most of their income came from work not subject to Social Security taxes. So we shouldn't treat those people as if they were poor Americans that need extra subsidies from other taxpayers.
And this was a provision that passed, if my memory serves me correct, under the Clinton years, right, when they were able to balance the budget, which I think might have been the last time they balanced the budget, right?
So the last major changes to Social Security happened in the 80s. But in the Clinton years, they did briefly balance the budget. In large part, it was because of cuts to defense spending, which ended up not being sustainable over the long term. And also there was a Social Security surplus. So they actually wouldn't have been able to balance the budget in early 2000 under the Clinton administration if it hadn't been for the Social Security payroll tax surplus. Of course, the Clinton administration got to take credit for that surplus and spend it immediately on other things, which is exactly what happened. And since 2010, Social Security has actually been running cash flow deficits, meaning now what it collects in taxes is no longer sufficient to pay out benefits. So it's now tapping Treasury to say, hey, remember when you spent all of our surpluses? Now it's time for you to pay those back. Of course, the problem is Treasury doesn't have any money that it doesn't get from the American people through either taxes or by selling government bonds, meaning adding to our debt.
So that's the act that people refer to as invading the Social Security Trust Fund? I mean, you hear that term of art all the time. You know, well, the government, you know, invaded the Social Security Trust Fund, and that's why Social Security's behind the eight ball at the present time.
That, unfortunately, is a myth. Social Security never actually saved any money. Social Security was always an income transfer program where every dollar coming in was going out immediately, either for Social Security benefits or other government spending. There was a story that they told in 1935 in order to convince the American people that it was okay for the government to establish a general welfare program, which Social Security at the time was the first federal government general welfare program. Prior to that, you only had benefits for veterans. And so the American people didn't believe in handouts or welfare, so they came up with this elaborate story about how Social Security was an earned benefit and telling people that they were paying in and then they would get their money out. And instead of calling a tax, they called it a federal insurance contribution. But this was all rhetoric in order to get something that was really unprecedented in United States history past the finish line. And that's a myth that has persisted to this day. But Congress has never raided the Social Security Trust Fund. It's just that the way the program was designed, there's no vault, there's no real trust fund. That's just a label that was slapped on an intergovernmental accounting mechanism. Social Security has always been a income transfer program, not unlike food stamps or welfare benefits.
Well, you just took all of my holiday cheer away from me. I recognize I've been living this myth my entire
sorry.
Life.
You're welcome.
I learned more today about Social Security than I have in a long, long time. And thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. I have a great paper up at cato.org called The Social Security Trust Fund Myth, if you need some Grinch-like reading this holiday season.
I will definitely read it this holiday season for sure. Because, you know, I was just curious about all these things that you hear, and it's like, no, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. That didn't happen. So they're selling us a pig in a poke, and we just don't know it, right?
That's right. That's how it goes.
Absolutely. Ramina Bhatia, thank you so much for joining us, Director of Budget and Entitlement Policy at Cato Institute. Again, have a wonderful holiday season.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us. So some of the stuff that was in the first iteration of the continuing resolution was $500 million for child care. That was supported by Democrats. It also dealt with junk fees that Joe Biden has talked a lot about, mandating that ticket sellers include the total ticket price at the beginning of the transaction. A cost of living adjustment for members of Congress was also in there, and also to allow members of Congress to opt out of Obamacare. Right? They were the ones that said that was phenomenal. It was great. And move them to the federal employees' health benefits instead. And further health care provisions would overhaul the regulation of pharmacy benefit managers was in there. Also was in there was giving the RFK Stadium to the District of Columbia in exchange for moving an Air National Guard squadron to Maryland. And federal funding for the replacement of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, which is a state asset. It would also give another $5.7 billion to the Virginia-class submarine program, which is already billions over budget. Restrictions on U.S. investment in China were included. The American Music Tourism Act got thrown in as well. This thing really began to look like Christmas in D.C., over and over and over again. They had a lot of stuff laying around it. They just kind of threw into this bill to try and get this passed and be all things to all people and get it done. It'll be interesting to see, and I hope Ramina Bhatia is right. I don't know about you, but she knows a lot about this federal budget. I love having her on the show. That they have an up or down vote on the continuing resolution. I don't know when the last time that actually occurred. A couple of other items in this bill, $29 billion for FEMA's Disaster Relief Fund, another $1.5 billion for economic adjustment assistance related to flood mitigation, $244 million for NOAA, $744 million to prepare for flood, hurricane, and other natural disasters, $13.5 million for the security of homes belonging to Supreme Court justices, $102,500,000, as I said, for the Francis Scott Key Bridge, and the list goes on and on and on. You have to go to about six different publications to figure out all of the pork that's involved in this bill. All right, we'll be right back. We'll check in with Scoot when we get back. He's on location, and we'll speak with him to see what he has coming your way. Stay with us. Well, Scoot's up next, and he's smelling good because he's live from Perfume Headquarters on the West Bank. Stop by, say hi, and save big on name brand perfumes and colognes just in time for the holidays and top toys for tweens and teens. How do these compare to the must-have toys that were on the shelves when you were a kid? And so much more coming your way. Have a great weekend. We'll see you guys on Monday.